Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to IWDM Radio. The program you are about to hear is a community service program on IWDM Radio. Please note, this content is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, legal, professional, or financial counsel or advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts, guests, or agents with IWDM or Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio is not endorsed, sponsored, or certified by any third-party agency. Thank you for listening.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. This is Imam Nazim Pasha, and you are listening to El Islam-based conversations. A lot to talk about. We're going to try to calm down and slow down and get in the posture to let Allah guide us and have that spirit to submit to be guided. Very important, very important. But let me announce my promises, which is to not waste your time and to not insult your intelligence. Both are noteworthy, both are challenges and that I put on myself to, as they say, get the job done, you know. Don't fool around with it. It's not playtime, you know, and a lot going on. And announcing, this is our holiday, you know. Adha is come up for most people on Wednesday. It's also Dhul Hijjah. People are fasting, if not the whole 9 days, they are fasting one of the days or the day before, which is tomorrow, the day of Arafat, you know. And there's many people who have been blessed to actually go on the Hajj, and they're there. Hopefully they're praying for us and getting the full benefit of that particular day. It's a must, you know. I see my brother on there. I don't know if he knows. I got the sign today. No classes this week due to the holiday, Eid, fasting, Dhul Hijjah, and then the celebration after that on Eid from probably the weekend, you know, Juma, you know, it's right behind it. This time they're not both on Friday, which was a special blessing. I don't know if we noticed that last time, but special blessing. This is our time to look at the big picture. I mean, that's what it's really saying. I mean, we got a grants to look and get and have and retain and nurture this thing called nature, but also the self-restraint and the self-discipline it takes to get through life and all of its challenges, you know. I started out starting this was going to be change is the challenge or everyone must evolve. That was going to be the name of the program. And it's going to be some of that, but not so much as we want to really look at the aid and really come away with some insights that are there, you know, the ayat, you know, the signs are there for us to develop and grow as Muslims and realize that this thing called life, you know, that we have to say at some point in time, a lot of times we take it for granted. We made plans, you know, back in the day, way back in the day, you know, I was a Christian and the hip way to acknowledge God, I call it hip because that's kind of how it was. You would leave instead of saying inshallah, which is more proper, more conscious and serious that you are acknowledging that I may not be here tomorrow. And before I commit to something or take something for granted, let me get perspective about it and say inshallah. It's been abused. It means a lot of different things, but it's properly used. It's just acknowledging that I'm not taking you for granted, Allah. I don't know when I was going to be born, and I don't know when I'm going to return to you. But I do know while I'm here, I need to act like that. that like that. Not some of the time. All of the time. All of the time. Never. It's real hard. No, it's not an easy thing to do. To know it, do it, and then make it a habit. Not just something you say as a knee-jerk response to something somebody else said. No, I'm conscious. We need to be conscious of the value of that kind of awareness that we do not, and we're telling it to Allah as we tell it to ourselves, probably telling it to ourselves, and then Allah is hearing us say it and seeing that we are sincere, we are very intentional, and we do not take this thing called life for granted, especially when we get a little gray in our hair, a little gray in our beards, brother. You know, it's time to now be aware of what life is has in store, has to offer. You know, we need to know that, because when we start thinking like that, we now do the boomerang. Okay, I'm getting much, so I've got to give much, and for those that were given much, they have to do much. And it didn't say it's like, take off the day. It's required. It didn't say when or how much or what day. Every day, all day. If you're alert and you're awake, that same awareness that we just mentioned, it has to come along with you. It has to be there. It has to be present for you to inhale life as it was intended and let out that stuff that's not going to be beneficial. It's not going to be helpful. One of the things that I do, and I'll share, I take the shower. Sometimes I'm in the bathtub, but most times, you know, it's on the run. It's the windows, and it's commitments, and it's appointments, and it's, you know, signing times and clocking times and all that if we're still working. So we have to be aware of what time is, what's going on. But the night before has a lot to do with what you do the next day if you prepare. And one of the things I do, if I'm not rushing, I want to get that shower in. And when I get that shower in, what I do is just turn my back to the shower head and let that water just hit right around the neck area. And then start to relax, maybe close your eyes a little bit, and just let all of that stress, all of that stuff that came up, all of the stuff that you probably may have to face tomorrow, just let it go down the back, down the spine, right down to your feet and on out the tub. See? And be conscious of it. Like I said before, be aware. I intentionally want this to be therapeutic. A shower, I'm hygienic and all that, but I want therapy to come with it. And sometimes we think the cold, hot shower, but the cold shower, I ain't getting into that because I'm just trying to get into it a little myself. It has a different effect. And if any time that you can get up enough courage to take one, I ain't talking about for the foolishness. I ain't talking about for that. I'm talking about healthy. If you're going to go out in the cold, how about not come from something hot, but come from something cold, or go out in the nice air in the spring if it's not contaminated and you know, all the stuff that we've been messing up the ecological system. It's good to get out there with the pores open. And that cold one's the hot one's going to give you the pores open, but the cold one's going to do something too. So anyway, enough of that. I'm not selling it. I'm just making you aware that there is the cold shower, if you would take. And once you get used to it, it will be, in terms of the body, it will be no different than the hot. It's just like the water we drink. We reverse it when we drink water. We want the cold water. See? But the water that we drink is maximized when we drink room temperature. You're 98.6 and you're 35, whatever it is in there. Cold as you get, you know, the sweat, it's so cold, the container, the glass that you're drinking, sweat on the condensation really on the side. And the way it tells you that it can be harmful, if you drink it too fast, you're going to have to pay a little bit. You're going too fast. Slow down, partner, and drink the water and try to get you some real water, H2O. Mountain Valley spring water with all that minerals and stuff that's in the rocks, some good old well water. See, that's water. And they sell it. They have it. I'm drinking good water, Spring Valley water. They've been out there on the market since 1871. Still kicking. Because they're what? It is valuable. And people who know the value, they'll spend their money or make the investment to get it. Mountain Valley spring water. Two things about it. It is super nutritious and delicious. And it's your body will thank you for giving it a nice drink of water. And it's in a glass. You can hear it. Glass. What's so special about the glass? What's so special about the glass is that you're not getting the plastic. That's what's so special about the glass. They haven't pulled it off the market because, you know, it's a big challenge to do that, but they've alerted people, EPA, you know, that's in the plastic. And then it's not ecological. It's not, what's the word? Anyway, it's not combustible. What is the word? Anyway, it's not that. It takes forever to go back into the soil, you know. Especially the ones they've been having that was like, it would never burst, it would never work. And then we got all stuck off, and then we got cans, cups. I mean, everything we just had plastic and plastic crazy. Same thing with styrofoam. They're looking at it pulling back. Same thing with straws. They got blue straws when you go shop for the people who are doing it. They got kind of like a wooden straw. Because straws are, they found it's problematic. So what is the thing that you heard in all of that? Things are changing. The world is changing. Are you preparing yourself for the changes? Are you ready for them so you can embrace them? Not duck your head under because, wow, it's just changing and time's fast. It's going so fast. We can think all of that if we want. We can think it's going fast. We can think it's changing. We can do whatever. But what we don't want to do is get our perspective from a higher source. Don't let the weatherman tell you, okay? He know what he know because he got all that education about the weather and, you know, he knows the rain coming in the clouds and all that stuff. He's good, right? But he can't tell you truthfully and honestly if his forecast is going to be true today, tomorrow, the next day, you know? He tell you, I'm going to give you some sunshine today. I'm going to give you some rain today. But that's just him talking. He's just like us. He don't know for sure if it's going to rain. He can forecast it. He don't know if it's going to snow. He don't know if all this stuff that's going on. Snow in California, they're still there. I have a friend I work with. He goes hiking and goes in all these places. He and his girlfriend are going to do tandem bike riding across the country. And then they're going to go up into the Sierras. And up in the Sierras, like I said, it's still snow. But once again, when you think like he thinking, when you're conscious of what I'm talking about, you get in touch with what? Mother Nature. In a way that you don't do what? On a daily basis. We can't even go outside at night and see the stars. Used to good. At least I could. To the point to where I would go over my neighbor's house and he had a telescope and see the Big Dipper, see the North Star, see the Little Dipper, see all those little things that they've given names to out in the nice dark blue sky with all these little lights, you know, and identifiable lights. Now I think you see the moon, maybe a star. Why? Because they messed up the ecological system. They messed up the balance. They, you know, from the whatever they're doing, cars and just everything. And then you see that, like I said before, they're pulling stuff off the market because it's not good for the health. DDT, the foaming and stuff that used to go into the house, asbestos. See, but what happens when we start talking like that? People don't want to hear that the living conditions are adverse And we spend all this money trying to get the latest and the greatest. And we step back and look, it's not so great after all. It does more harm than benefit. In order to really be healthy, you have to get a holistic approach. You have to get someone who really has not an agenda or something that's going to benefit him to prescribe the medicine or to recommend the operation. I said to myself many, many years ago, the medical industry has two things that they have to offer, medication, and then if that don't work, operation. See? And if you really, really care about yourself, you will be focusing on function. That's where health lies. How good is everything in the body functioning? Okay. They don't talk about that. They wait until they diagnose something. 60% of you have to be impaired for them to see that you got something. You hear what I said? The medical industry, and they take what they take. Early diagnosis. The earlier we find out, the better it's going to be. But when you go in, they're going to tell you all the stuff you've been putting in is causing a problem. We don't give it a name. We diabetes, a lot of cholesterol. We give you sugar, high blood pressure, and on and on and on and on and on. All kind of sophisticated names and whatnot. So our job is to understand that that can be avoided, really caring about yourself. You really love your Allah and you love yourself. We will take better care of ourselves. And when we do or whatever, we'll make sure we're trying to be our best self. Not that good face we put up and we holy and we pray, to get married. Not that one. The one that says, oh, Allah, you do so much for us as human beings. Now it's our turn to show you that we appreciate this by taking care of ourselves and quit complaining about what other people are doing. Because if you have your health and you're taking care of yourself, wealth will come and you develop an affordable lifestyle. Not trying to keep up with the Joneses, not trying to keep up with the Muhammads, not trying to keep up with the Alis, not thinking that people owe you something, not thinking that certain income is going to get you wherever you need to go. Income says what income says. You need something coming in. But in order for you to get the full benefit of what's coming in, you have to have a mindset to control the money and not let the money control you when you have affordable lifestyle just because we can. And here's the no-nos of all no-nos. We don't get in debt to get the car, the house, the creature comforts to the point to where it's I owe. So off to work, I go. That hits home. I understand. This capitalist society got all kind of perks and benefits now, and it's great. But having and taking advantage of them is when you can have access to the money, and you don't do like the brother told me a couple of days ago. He's waiting for his check, but he said it's already spent. It's bad enough that they take the taxes and everything out before you even get the money you work for. And even though you might have heard, pay yourself first, do we really do that? Even if it ain't but a nickel. If you had started when you heard what it said about paying yourself first, just imagine where you would be at now. But that's for another time and another lecture. But it's so true. If we understood then what we understand now about finances and the difference between an expense and an investment. One has a return, the other one doesn't. One is debt and bills that you created and you got to pay now. The other one is that you know that this $50 or $15 that I got to spend for whatever I'm spending for, it is going to be so beneficial. It's going to be, and it's going to keep me from having to go through so much stress because I didn't take full advantage of whatever it was. I had a problem with my car today. I left the lights on, so it drained my battery. I got a good battery, so it didn't knock the battery out. It just temporarily wouldn't turn over. It's gone. So this guy I'm working with, I'm pulling out my cables and everything. I'm getting ready. He said, no, we don't need that. I was like, what? You don't need a cable. It's a good cable, man. Good thick cables. You know, this ain't Mickey Mouse. So he come out with, look, 8x10. No, it wasn't even 8x10. Maybe laptop size or smaller. This gadget and two little old things you put over your, you used to put over your plus and minus, positive and negative. You cut it on and it tells you if it's got enough charge, it's charged or not, is it ready or not, it's 80%, 80, just like your cell phone. Then you plug in the two cards, one red and one black. So that means you ain't got to see if you're on the right side of the car, what side of the battery's is. You plug it in, you make sure it's charged, you put one on the red and one on the black. No more battery chargers or no more of that stuff there. No more complaints for the woman. Put it right in the trunk, put it right in the car, check it to make sure it's charged. You put it on there, I turn my key over, crank that up. What have they done? While we're complaining, they've been in the lab producing, and they have condensed the whole electrical process as far as that. And then you can do whatever else you may need to charge. You can put the charger in your phone at home, in your socket at house, or you can put it in your cigarette lighter and charge it up. Little old square red box, look like I don't know what to call it. Little small things to put on your battery. You see? So what's happening? The world is going on without us. This is a technological information age. It is going to stay that way, and it's going to move forward, and it's going to, the gap's going to get bigger because people are going to get frustrated because you got to take and open up your mind to learn more about what's going on and how it works. And not think that somebody going to hijack your account, because it may happen. Put enough faith in Allah and then invest in what you need to make sure that these things don't happen. And if they do happen, you're covered. You got the FDIC stuff. They're supposed to, if they take your money or they assume your ID and they do, they're supposed to put the money back. Now I know they're jacking it off and they're going out of business and they're doing all that whatever. But it ain't over till it's over. Until it completely falls, you keep investing in it like it's not going to fall yet. And by the time it does fall, because you're investing in it, you'll see what to do when it falls. Because everybody don't fall when it falls. Everybody didn't suffer when COVID came. Some people made more money when COVID came than they were making before COVID came. Why is that possible? Because they got money. They risked. No. Ask Shaq and the guy who plays Curry, Stephen Curry, and all those guys who got in that cryptocurrency before it got legitimately sound enough to do what they were getting ready to do with it, or was promised that they could do with it. Until you make it a medium of exchange and you've done everything that it takes to be in the medium of exchange, just like a dollar bill or paper money or credit card money, you can't be playing with that. Because just like it'll come and have you thinking you're a millionaire because you got 9 million whatever cryptocurrencies, it will go away. Because you have to get it and treat it like it's supposed to be treated, not something that goes up and down and fluctuates and goes all over. It's got to be a medium of exchange. It's coming, just like plastic money came or credit cards, and look how they are now, and look what they're doing. You used to have to sign. Now you just hit plug in the chip. You used to have to plug in the chip. Now you just tap, and it's got the frequency there. And it sends the message, and it goes wherever, and it recognizes you, your thumb, your face, whatever. So what are we experiencing? Technological advancements. But what do we know? MashaAllah. It is as Allah wills. This ain't nothing that they're doing because they're so smart and they're just going to take us into the 21st century and they're going to have cars that don't have drivers and they're going to cars that don't need you to park and cars that will tell you that you got injured and they will signal the 911. You ain't got to call because maybe you can't call, but your watch will notify this for you. Beautiful. To go right alongside over the Juneteenth, Father's Day holiday, four mass shootings occurred and took the shootings for the year to over 500. Imam Muhammad's wisdom, he said, these are the best of times and these are the worst of times. And you may be saying to yourself, well, brother, how could that be happening? I just showed you how this happening. One of the most technological driven societies on earth. We're one of the wealthiest, highly invested electronic technology and information on the planet. But everything at risk. People want to steal your money. People want to shoot at you because you're this or you're that. I had a man want to attack me in the parking lot a while ago because I have a car and my license on the back says skin doctor. People who see my face and see me driving a car with a skin doctor on it, they want to look at me half crazy and approach me and ask me, am I a doctor? And I tell them, no, I'm not in cosmetology and I'm not in pornography. I'm in the bath and beauty industry. Well, and his complaint, after he wanted me to confirm some kind of medical problem somebody was having, because he told her to go to the emergency room, and I didn't want to get in. I'm not going to get involved. I don't know nothing about that, man. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you're going on. So as he was leaving, you're not a doctor. And I was happy to tell him, like I told other people who I work with. You know you shouldn't have it on your life, but you can't say that. I said, Dr. Pepper ain't no doctor either. They got it, so how come I can't do it? I have a name that suggests something, but you have to ask people. What does that mean? Are you in dermatology? No, I'm not. Not cosmetology, dermatology, pornography, none of that. I'm in the beauty and bath industry. I sell products that are good for the skin. On my card, it says shea butter is your skin's best friend. And legitimately so. How do we know? Because when shea butter finally landed, and got to the forefront of what you put on your skin, mango butter, all these other butters and all this other kind of stuff, they realized after the Africans failed to understand, people are not going to want that hard shea butter that's raw and it's got a scent to it. They lack cream, cold cream. They lack stuff that has a fragrance. They lack, you know, all the stuff, the bells and whistles. They'll stay with the soap because it makes bubbles and it lathers up. But once they get the shea butter soap that's milled differently, then they can see the difference between what we're offering and what's been offered with the shea butter and got a scent to it. They got all kind of oils they put in it, and, man, it just lasts and lasts and lasts because it was designed for the skin. One of the things it was designed for, I'll put it like that. And it has multiple things, and now they discovered it. Just like they did when they had lemons. They put lemon in everything. Made you believe lemon would cure you for cancer. This lemon would do anything. They done slowed down a little bit, but they did the same thing with shea butter. Because what? They done store what makes a buck. Their body oil, same thing. It took us some boom years and that's just about status quo type of thing. But it used to be big time. And you could actually make and you still can. You can set up a business and make a real good business off of selling oils. But it's not as popular as it used to be. But it still holds on. When you put on oil the problem with selling oil is that it doesn't go out. People don't need oil once you give them a body of oil. Especially that used to be the king, Egyptian Musk. That was the one that rocked. You know, everybody who had to have that, you know, because of the fragrance, takes on the fragrance of the person who is using it. So see, these are the things that when you hear, and you hear them in the context that I'm trying to share them, you see the Muslims are not that bad off. The Islamic phobia age has kind of come and gone. Time to go out and be known. Let them know what we got to offer. And we want to not try to push everybody out because they're eating pork or they're doing this or they're doing that. We're doing what Eid al-Adha is for. Big picture approach to seeing the human family and indoctrinating yourself with a human consciousness. So that the stuff that other races or other people do won't upset you because that's your family. No, not knowing, being hasty, being domineering, being dictatorial, being using the iron and the weapons and the iron fist to rule, like Putin, who's on the run now, I think, because they're sick of that. They're sick of having to kill their neighbor to say, and their cousins, and to say that they're the still the king on the mountain. The day of the Wild Wild West dictators is slowly coming to an end. That's on both planets. Trump think he's going to run and win again. I don't think so. But he's acting like it. He can get enough momentum and get the ball spinning again and convince enough left-wing Caucasians that he's just what the doctor ordered to bring this society back to what it is. This society is not going to come back to what it was because they turned their back on what they said they wanted. God bless America and God we trust. But now they're endorsing things to promote a freedom that is very diabolical and wrong, to tell people that you can do what we told you couldn't do because now it's legal, but it's not moral. How are you going to get rid of morals? Morals will check the rationale that tells you to do something, even though conscience tells you it's not good. Your soul tells you it's not good. But you have rational lies that you can perpetuate and convince yourself because we are out of touch with the truth and the perspective that the truth will give you and the nature that you would have. You wouldn't even think that the solution to relationship is to join the same sex bandwagon. That doesn't hold up. Okay, I don't want this to happen and men do it. I don't want them to treat me like this and cheat on me and do this thing, but so men do it. Oh, then it's all that. I'm trying to get with somebody of the same sex and they won't do it because they have a slogan that says only women know how to treat women. Oh, I think that's true. So how is that true? How is that applicable to all the people who worked those kind of differences out and got married and stayed married and had a child and produced strong, healthy, wholesome families? What do you have to say to them? And I know your emotion would tell you this, right on, more power to them and all that whatnot. But you changed the whole base for relationships and choosing who's going to be involved in you in matrimony and all that. While at the same time you realize you can't have children. The whole procreation thing is you've thrown that out the window. You got to either adopt or you got to get impregnated by some other force. Or you're taking chemicals and changing other parts of your body hormonally and whatever, and now what used to be this, now is that. And you don't think Mother Nature eventually is going to put on the brakes and say, "Grr," and there's going to be consequences to be had. You can't come here and tell God indirectly that he made a mistake. You finna correct it for him without asking him, is it possibly that I'm need correcting? That I'm making a mistake?
that I've gotten overly emotional, that I'm suffering from pain and confusion, and I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I'm having to be under the mercy of, I think, this terrible person called men, and I know exactly six men that caused me to think like I'm thinking now, and one of them was my father. How are you going to make a decision with all the billions of people out there? You can go local, you can go national, or you can go global and get you a wife or get you a husband before you give up on the whole process and think that you're going to jump ship and turn it around and come out with all these different equations that you can do. I want to be this. I want the top to be this, but I want the bottom to be that. I want the bottom to be this, but I want the top to be this. And you think that's freedom. You think that's really, you really got it right now. You can just do whatever you want to do. People who used to be one of the dreaded industries, nip and tuck, plastic surgery. But now they are establishing, they are, I would think, a billion, zillion-dollar business now. Them in Botox and all the stuff, because you want a certain kind of lips, and then you want to have certain kind of hips. What was wrong with sticking what you were sitting here with? Now you can do all the stuff that that you're equipped to do now. Ignoring the fact that body parts are being objectified. When you start telling people or buying into what they're selling with the lowering of the morals, I don't want to wear a brassiere and I'm not going to wear one. I don't want to wear underwear. If I do wear underwear, I want my dress not to cover my underwear and my private parts. You want to be able to see through. I want to be bold enough and shocking to go out in that kind of a wardrobe, and I don't want anyone to say that I'm being vulgar or immoral doing it. I love my body. I don't mind showing my body. You know, and I want to believe that it's all right when it's not all right, because first of all, nobody wants to see your body. No one is making requests to see your body. Now, there are all these long followers, they're following you in your body and picking up the clothes and picking up the half of clothes and whatnot. Now, they're dressing because you're dressing that way, but it wasn't something that was, like they use the word consensual. It wasn't, I got educated and I know the value of my body, and it's really, really, really an enlightened state and in a very educated state to show more of it, especially as I get older. It shows people that I still got it, and when you got it, you're supposed to flaunt it. Where's that coming from? See? And going full circle now, hitting various different topics that are all connected. By what? By the fact that that's what our human family is doing now. And in order to see it for what it really is, you have to have a human consciousness. You have to be aware that a very devilish message casting a spell over our fellow human beings have caused them to absolutely lose their mind, lose their conscience, and lose their soul, and lose their taqwa, or their God consciousness, and nothing like that bothers them. They can be in a relationship, it end, and 2 weeks later they're in another relationship talking about that we're finna go on with that after having been in the other one for 19, 20 years. The mind just can't process stuff that fast. So don't even try. Think about it. You can forget your car keys and they be in your hand. You can forget your glasses and they be on your forehead. You can forget your car keys because you had two sets and you left the one in the ignition and the other one you locked up the car with. That's what I did. That's how come I didn't have no battery. Not only did I leave the car keys in there, I left the ignition on because I got an emergency call and I didn't even think. Now half almost in this heat, I'm almost half asleep. Get the call, rush out the car because it's kind of a semi-emergency. I come back to no battery, and then I look in the ignition. And I want to believe that I can figure out life and all of its complexities. Everything that they throw at me, I can handle it. without God's guidance? No way, Jose. Forget about it. It ain't happening. And that's why it's creeping. They're trying to announce it. They're telling people, watch your mental health. I'm going to say that again. Watch your mental health. One more time, just for the, because we're going to make a very important point. Watch your mental health. Now, they do that, but what are they doing? They don't connect it, because it's connected to your spiritual health. It's connected to your moral health. So if you forgot about God and you only go on some of the time, and when you do go, you're going based on the fact you believe that there is a God, but you don't believe in that God. You don't trust that God. You don't seek that God's guidance. You don't turn to that God. Immediately when something goes wrong, you complain like all get out about what's going on and how terrible it is. The only consolation is that it's Friday. You cannot not see all the blessings that God has to offer with that kind of attitude. And you can't laugh it off. Ha, ha, ha. I'm just joking, but I am going to go to happy hour now. I'm going to get some joy back in my life that only this alcohol can do. And you see it being promoted every day on the programs. People have a little trouble, or people trying to socialize and have a good time. They feel like, go to the happy hour, go have a little drink, socialize with your friends, play your little games and do your little stuff. But what you're saying is that I was so stressed out, in an ongoing, 314, I got you, I'm coming, coming. I'm in ongoing situations, and there's nothing I think of, not even a deep breath. That's what the basketball player does before he shoots under pressure. He takes a deep breath. What does that happen when he does that? He's engaging a part of his body that engages the other part of his body that lets him relax. Big old name for it, you know, that you can do, but when you do it, you see the effect. Because the deeper you breathe, the better it helps things to relax. Because you engage things that are on that depth or that level. If you just nose, mouth, that's not a shallow breathing. Mouth in, nose out. And then when you see what happens, you say, wow, why is it like that? And how much other stuff that's connected? Okay, I do that for my physical. What do I do for my mental? What do I do for my spiritual? Thing called prayer. Thing called acknowledging these holidays are coming up. Thing called fasting on those holidays. A thing called reaching out to Allah, because Allah will reach out to you on those kind of days, and you've been made aware of that. And you've done it to the point to where you see the benefit of it, and you see the results that you get when you do it. Another conversion to what you had already converted to and said you were going to do, now you make an even deeper conversion because you get a reminder on the holiday that's designed to ask you to make that depth of a conversion. You broaden from the nature that you have to the family that you have, and your responsibility to be on the lookout that will be more grounded in the fact there is a creator, he is real, and we don't say he because he's a man. We say he because that's a pronoun that's sufficient, and we, you know, we can say the proper noun, God, Allah, or we can say he because we're aware that we're talking about something bigger than the little words that we're using to try to talk about it. Okay. Let me stop. 314-833. Welcome aboard.
Yes, 314-833. Yes, assalamu alaikum. I'm Nazim Pasha. I'm Mark Shaheed here from the STL, the Gateway City of St. Louis, and the Show Me State of Missouri. I want to say alhamdulillah, for those who don't know, that means that the praise and the thanks belongs to God. First and foremost, to be able to be in your right mind these days. You know, when I was a boy, Yeah, you know, when I was a boy, you know, you may have not seen, you might be able to relate to this. The old people used to say to the young ones, son, be sure to count your blessings. You know, for you to be able to count anything, you have to be consciously aware.
Yep.
You know, you can't count something that you're not even consciously aware of, you know. And sometimes blessings come in disguise, you know.
Yes.
And lessons are blessings, you know, that's very important. You know, you see that in the word lab, lessons are blessings. If, in fact, that you realize, and that's having real eyes and that you really see the lessons as you experience life and getting or extrapolating something from it that help to make you a better person. You know, some people go through life and they go through life and they come out bitter, but not better.
Yep.
So you want what you experience in life to come out better. You know, when you were talking about in terms of the issues and problems, it seemingly many people today are experiencing and managing their life. It kind of reminds me of a dua. And for those who don't know, you know, what a dua is in terms of al-Islam-based conversation, it really is a prayer that is made asking for or requesting something from God, you know. And we should want to just do what we call 911 prayers, you know, when we get it. Well, then we remember God, and then our soul begins to speak, oh, Lord, please help me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, we don't realize, you know, that word prayer is a word tologist. I've used it for many years, paving roads around your efforts routinely. That's what prayer does. It paves roads around your efforts routinely. But it doesn't just mean that you pray only when you get in certain situations and circumstances.
Right.
Yeah, you pray anyway, but by praying, you are paving roads around your efforts. And this is very important. The operative word there is efforts. And you know, God says in the Quran, the final revelation to humanity, that the human being can only get what they strive or they make efforts or work toward, you know, and soon it will be made manifest. This is very important. But also in terms of managing our life, as you were speaking, it reminded me of the dua. As I said, dua really is a request or asking God for something. One of Imam Muhammad's favorite duas, and when I first heard it years ago, I didn't write it down. I said, I'm just going to commit this to memory because it's worth learning by heart. You know, my mother used to always say, learn things by heart. That means that you have an affinity for it. You have a love for it, a passion for what it is, and that you want it to become a part of you. And what Imam Muhammad said made so much sense in his own personal dua, and it's a dua that I use on a daily basis. And he says, with God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer, O Allah, I cannot manage this life of mine, not by myself, not on my own, not without you. So please, Allah, make my life what you want it to be, what you prefer to be, and, O Allah, do not allow me to act on my own, but help me to act only in obedience to you. I hear and I obey. Those are some very, very powerful words that's being said there, because if you say that dua, that prayer, with sincerity, honesty, and integrity, and with transparency, then you actually are summoning Allah to be a part of your life and to be a managing partner in your life.
Yes.
Realizing your own limitations. You know, when you started this production tonight, you was talking about the will when you were saying, inshallah. And, of course, this is revelation, you know, God tells us. You know, this is for all human beings. You don't have to be a Muslim. You can listen to Al-Islam-based conversation. You know, God, you know, he says to all of us, never say what you're going to do tomorrow without saying, inshallah. What does that mean? That means if it's God's will. That's recognizing the limitation of the will that God has given to us.
Right.
But only God's will prevails. This is should be very, very simplistic for those, whether you're Muslim or not Muslim, to understand. And of course, you know, our Christian brothers and sisters, once again, going back when I was young and you was young, many, many, many moons ago, you know, people would always say what they will be willing to do if it's the Lord's will, if it's in God's will. So this was an acknowledgement. This was an acknowledgement of the conscious human being, the God-conscious human being, knowing that they were limited to know what tomorrow will bring. Only the one that has created everything, including time, and that's independent of everything, including time and space, would actually know. So we'll do that if it's the Lord's will, if it's God's will. In other words, if it happens, then we say, mashallah. We know it was God's will. But we have to wait on time. And Allah doesn't have to wait on anything because he's the creator of all things, including time. So, you know, this just brings a consciousness. You know, I'm really enjoying the Al-Islam-based conversation because I think it should bring a realization to us that we're not in control of everything. And then also when decisions are made, he was speaking about the two major components of the soul, the rational nature and the moral nature. And those two natures, they need to be always connected.
Mm-hmm.
They should never be separated. You know, because if they are separated, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. And the soul's got a goal. It's trying to get back to its destiny. And this is very important. I could say a lot more, but I just wanted to add my 2 cent worth on some of the things that you said, you know, because even if you're not Muslim and you listen, the conversation, the communication, the information have to bring about a reformation in people's lives that actually need it, or a transformation in people's lives, so that they can continuously grow. You know, knowing is growing. And so what it is that you don't know, now you know, then this can cause you to grow. You need to get rid of weeds. That's the acronym for grow. You want to get rid of weeds that's in your life that stunt the growth, that helps to transform your life, evolve your life, if you will. I'll stop there. I think I said enough. I'm always enjoying Al-Islam-based conversation, and I did find out no class today, so I'm tuning in and would advise those that listen to inform others to tune in. That makes a good conversation. Thank you, my brother and friend. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum as-salam, and thank you. Oh, I was going to mention that one thing came back. I don't think I said it. The other thing you used to say before, no, two things, really. Before you were leaving, you tell people, I'll see you tomorrow, I'll see you in the morning. Well, God willing, and the creek don't rise. It was a little bit of a...
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
It was an acknowledgement.
How simplistic that is, Imam Pasha. But it just showed that people of yesterday, they were so God-conscious. This is very important. And now we're not seeing as many people that are God-conscious as being reflected in their behavior. You know, yep. God says in the Quran that all human beings, they behave according to their own disposition. The question has to be asked, what is the disposition of many of the people today? And it's being reflected in their behavior. So it's very important that the disposition, if the behavior is not that it's becoming of what God's will and purpose for the human being, then obviously the disposition has to change. And we can't change that without God's guidance. This is very,
very important.
I'll stop there and continue to listen in. As-salamu alaykum.
Shukran.
Afwan.
Oh, you know, those kind of calls when you have someone who can appreciate and reciprocate, you know, it's one thing to hear and acknowledge somebody else. But when you add on in a standalone idea besides their idea, then you see some real progress because you can't see it all. You can't know it all. And some things that I see, my brother Mark, he don't see, and some things I don't see and he see. So when you put them together, you got a duality there that you didn't have before. You know, it's like they say with the chewing gum commercial, double your pleasure and double your fun with double mint gum. Oh, yeah. Well, let me say the one last thing that used to get me when I used to go to church. But I'm a Baptist. I was a Baptist at that time. And every now and then I would go visit another church. I won't tell you why I went, but I went to other churches. But what I loved about the Methodist church was what they said at the end of the service. Every service I went to, and it wasn't Sunday school. They didn't do it in Sunday school. It had to be you stayed for the church. And when you got through with the services, and the preacher or the minister, he said, "May the Lord watch between me and thee while we're absent one from another." I said, man, that don't say it all. I mean, that's well-wishing. That's putting it in the right hands of God. He's the one who's going to watch over us and save us from ourselves. Sometimes, you know, you have to get saved from yourself. You done got so backwards, so twisted in your thinking. We can be our own worst enemy. And don't know it. See? We have befriended the devil by befriending the things that he recommended we do when things happen. Like we were saying earlier, a little painkiller called whiskey, a little painkiller called marijuana, a little painkiller called cocaine, a little painkiller called heroin, a little painkiller called crack. Given, when we first start out, there is some differences in how we feel about things, and there's a cloud nine effect. But to show you the body is rejecting it from the minute that you put it in, eventually you start having the repercussions or the consequences of putting a foreign object in your body and expecting it to raise your adrenaline and raise your happiness by some kind of way raising your awareness. If you are aware, like we just mentioned before, what this life represents and what it requires of us to do or not to do to get the benefit of what it has to offer, this thing we call happiness, fulfillment. Get it because you want it. We have to do what it takes to get it, and then you got it. It's in your possession. You possess it, and it possesses you. And just like something will come out of it, what will come out of it? I tell myself every day, I will not let anyone kill my spirit or take my smile. No one has the right to that. It's mine. I don't let stress, what other people are doing, what other people don't do. When we do that, we give them too much power. The Democrat Party is sending out messages, fear tactics, Send us money. We need a vote of confidence. If you don't give it, President Trump going to get back in again, or some office is going to get filled by the people, and they're going to do a reverse the Roe versus Wade. If they don't take God away from us and his guidance, I think we'll be all right. We've gotten all right about it, about this fault. But see what happens, we go back to that problem we talked about last week. We start counting. They got so many people, and they got millionaires, and they got $250 million just to get this and just to do that. What do we say about Allah? What do we say his power extends? Not supposed to fear or grieve? And we're not supposed to fall victim to the Satan's scheme by doing what? Placing something in our way to make us fear. It could be money. It could be marriage. It could be the political arena. They're going to get in, or the technology arena. They're going to have things. After a while, we're going to have no jobs because they're going to have robots. What do you think they base the robot on? Why is it excel in this area? Because they base it on the human being. The robot has to perform human functions. I'm pausing because I want that to sink in. So what does that mean? In order for them to have a robot that's really going to work, they need you and I. So what does that mean? You have to educate yourself enough so even if they get a robot, even if they take your job, you can go re-educate yourself and get another job or start your own business. Them doing what they're going to do, which is some of it's good, some of it's just to be God-like. For everything that God does, they do. And they'll try to present it like they're God. And they want you to take this devotional nature that we have and give it to them and give praise to them and be appreciative to them and put your trust in them. When they haven't even figured out that some things you just can't see. And it's not a bad thing. It shouldn't be worried. Well, how can you prove that there's a God? When is the last time that anybody saw it? You die. Some people come back and say they came back and they saw what was on the other side and they saw it was this and it was that. Why is that so necessary when what you do is to know that there is an afterlife and then act like there is something after this, and then all those questions that you was having while you were going on in this life, you get answered in the afterlife. But if you don't qualify to do what you need to do to get to the afterlife, you may be going on the wrong elevator going down instead of going up. Or we're going, I'll put it like that, like I'm not being self-righteous or holier than thou and telling you you're going to hell. I'm telling you what will send you to hell. I'm telling you what will keep you thinking about stuff, and you will be in hell. Doubting and waiting for some proof that God has given us from so many different sources. Everything in the creation testified that there is a creator. Everything. There's nothing that you can do, see, be, have that doesn't prove itself that there's a creator. And that it does take some kind of ritual to acknowledge that it's under the influence of that creator. You see animals, and you see them adhere to how they're supposed to be because they are inhabitants of the jungle. It's a situation. Check and balance. That's what it is. I'm sorry. I'm looking for that. So they prey on one another in this very violent way, but they never are capable of praying to the extent of genocide. They prey on these animals, and then somewhere across the way or up the street or up the desert or up somewhere is having babies. to replenish what the jungle's lifestyle takes. Just like you and I, we eat, and then we have to have farmers produce so we can eat again. And so something gets eaten. Molecules of oxygen get swallowed, you know, so that that process can go on. Oxygen and carbon dioxide and all the stuff that goes on. What, the whole breathing process, the whole eating process is laid out like that. There's going to be an Eid festival. It's going to be elaborate, sophisticated. They're going to be eating from the time you get there to the time that you leave. Something has to die in order for that to happen. And when people get carried away with the vegetarian and anything, something has to die. Molecules of oxygen die so that we live. Carrots, lettuce, all this, plant-based stuff. So we're not killing animals, but you're going to have to do something to get 773, got you. You have to do something to get that vegetables. You have to plant it somewhere and till the soil. The soil doesn't ask for you to put something in it so you can eat. The soil accommodates you to put something in so you can eat. Just like everything else that's a resource here accommodates this human being who's supposed to be in charge of things and knows how to do this in a designed and guarded way so that you protect the soil and you protect what it has to do, and you till at a certain time and you harvest at a certain time, and you just you do something to the soil to make it strong and powerful again, so that when the people eat what they eat, they get what's in the soil and the food that they eat. When you tamper with that and you got all this processed food and all this frozen food and all this other kind of GMO food, then you got a problem. What has happened? Man has stopped letting God's guidance be there and start treating the human body like it's not the human body. You just can't put anything in me just because it tastes good or it's got enough sugar or enough salt to do all these destructive things over a point of time and take my health away from me because I'm following your lead. I'm thinking you're going to produce stuff that's going to be help me have better years of function. That's wellness. When I can function without the need of all the stuff that they tell you that has all these side effects. But I got this thing that they got a name for, and I got to take this medicine. They got tons of them that they're making, to, not to cure my stuff, but to manage my stuff so that I can live with the stuff that I've messed up. And they didn't tell you, like I said, it's either medicate or operate. They never tell you, you can reverse this. Your body will heal itself. The minute that you stop smoking cigarettes, it will start getting better and rewarding you for not smoking cigarettes, for not drinking alcohol, for not staying up all night and getting 2 hours of sleep. You see, it's doing all of that. Okay, we got 7173 and then 314. So, but what is it asked of you to do all of it? Take good care of me. Love me and have genuine concern for my well-being. And then you won't have to have advertisement going out about the mental health. You won't have heart problems still almost number one in the medical industry, even though they've tried to do this and they tried to do that. What's killing the heart? The absence of the right message to it, not being aware of trying to get rid of the stuff that's causing you to say, I've been invaded and I have all these sicknesses in my soul, my sin, sick soul. But I have a creator that loves me and I love him, and he just asks me not to stop sinning, just sin less. Did you hear the simplicity of that statement? I know it's a lot of traps out there, God is telling me. I know it's hard. It's a lot of temptation. With the food that we eat, with the summers and the winters that people dress up, with the, all the challenges and with all the sexy things that they tell you you can do when you buy this dress and these shirts and these shoes and these pants. And you buy the hype. We buy the hype. God said, I know that. But if you could manage yourself enough, self-discipline and self-restraint to just sin, but sin less. Commit, and I'm not going to commit that sin like I used to. I'm going to stop doing that. And then when you do that, what does Allah do? He rewards you, gives you your health back, affects your body and your bodily functions, because reduces you down from your A1C level down to, you don't need that shot anymore. You don't need that medicine anymore. Your insulin is back on short because you're not putting so much in your body to where you run out of insulin because it's trying to be on so many fronts because you're just having a sugar attack. And half the time, it's not because it's the sugar that's bad. It's the sugar that ain't sugar that's bad. Processed sugar versus cane syrup. See? The one. Those things like that are causing the problem. Okay. Now, for me, 773, and then we'll get back to 314 in a minute. Yes, 773.
Assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Okay, assalamu alaikum. Once again, I thank Allah, Brother Pasha, because all your shows or your programs are about, first of all, keeping our focus on Allah, who is the power and source greater than any man. You bring forth conversation to enhance our God consciousness. You always bring the light of understanding to life, to its circumstances, its situations, and raise our conscious awareness. And you always bring a healing message. I get so much out of what you say, you know. And I said, I want to be like him when I grow up. And what I mean by that is being able to, well, ask the Allah to embody my spirit, those words that I can relay them back to others and be of service to humanity, because I know that these are the conversations that will transform us. And you keep it so real. You keep it so real that you cover so many areas that speaks to the human soul. And that's just so important. It's not just any kind of conversation. It's a conversation that resonates with the soul. And I just want to say thank you again. I always thank Allah for people like you, you know, that I have a privilege to listen to. And not only just listen, to take from them what I can use and for myself as well as what I can use to help other people. So I just want to acknowledge you on that one. And thank you again. Thanks.
Alaykum. Well, you know, I tell you, and this is the truthful truth, you know, I benefit from people calling in and talking and acknowledging and benefiting, because that's really what it's all about. I mean, leading by example. Everybody is not like Brother Mark and some of the things he does, you know, with his memory and with his rheumatology. And some people are not like me. I see something and it just impresses me. I'm gonna tell others about it. And it goes back to the same thing, church understanding, church background still resonating with me. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. I said, that's what I'm going to do. I didn't always do it. Sometimes distractions got in the way. But once I got out from under and got the freedom from away from that distraction, I put forth an effort to be my best self. How many times? All the time if I could. I didn't say, well, it's Sunday or it's Monday, it's time to take a day off. No. The situation today won't let you do that. They direly need righteous people who will lead by example, who are practicing what they're preaching, who recognize that we don't need preachers, we need teachers. It's not enough to preach the word of God. You have to preach the word of God so it's like what the Bible says it should be like. It won't be a salt that has lost its savor. Salt has a healing effect. It has a extending the shelf life of something. That's why they put so much in this food that we eat. They ain't putting it on there for seasoning. They're putting it on there to keep the shelf life, because salt will do that. But what does it do to your life, your and my life, when you have to eat 680 grams of salt on the sausage that I like so much? See, do my due diligence that I was taught in the Nation of Islam. Read the labels, brother. It says it's chicken soup. Chicken soup is good for you. Read the ingredients on there, okay? Chicken, water, fruit, and some of these names that you can't, because they got to put process and filler in this. Okay, I don't know what that is. Exact or moving. I need a periodic chart to see what that was. And then you find it, and then it says sugar, 45 or whatever, maybe less. But then you get to the salt. And you'll see stuff that you may really like or whatever. But just check out the label. Because I used to do that. I had to find out what kind of oil you're putting in here. What did you cook in? What did you put the casing in? What did you? And then when you read it and you can't see it and you can't figure it out, you know, like a pepperoni. I didn't know for a long time they had beef pepperoni. So I just avoided that pepperoni. Because what was the saying when it came to that? When in doubt, do it out. Simple. Those were the foundations to get you on your guard. See? You were around when Muhammad Ali was around. We talked about it. What counts and counting what counts. Doing what counts is what counts. See? Making the best out of your day. That's what counts. Looking and counting external situations, you can get deceived. It just means more people going to hell than there are that's going to heaven. They got the numbers and they got the streets covered as glamour and gleam, and they're shouting and they're partying and they're laughing and they're joking. But all you have to do is ask yourself, are they happy? If they're happy, because the eyes mirror the soul, you'll see it in their face. You'll see it in their eyes. If they're not happy, you'll see this blank look. Or you see them forcing a smile, but you can't get the smile with the lips that like they're supposed to be. You get a teeth. They give you that teeth, the teeth, and then they pull it back, the lips. When you really smile and you all got joy in your heart and everything, it comes from the heart, and you feel the warmth of the smile. You feel the warmth of the hug. You feel the warmth of the handshake. Because it's real. It's that expression that I want to give you. It's that salutation I want to give you to let you know how I feel about you and how I feel about our relationship and how I want to extend a greeting to you or a salutation to you or a gesture to you. That's what God said you're supposed to do. See? Then you'd be saying hallelujah and all these praise the Lord less. Because what we can do, according to 314, what we can do, and it said again, it's the same thing, Christianity, speaking to you and I to help us understand, giving us knowledge, maybe not wisdom, but giving us knowledge. You're so heavenly bound, you know earthly good. What does that mean? You don't get too holy. You're already there in heaven because you got a glimpse. But you're not necessarily going to go to heaven because you're full of hell. You're always making a hell for people by getting in their face with your complaints. Asking them to do for you what you're supposed to do for yourself. Don't expect people to do for us what they're supposed to do for yourself. When we get out of this thing and turn the corner and establish ourselves like every other community, we have to do that. And if we get any help, we should insist that it be matching funds. I'm not going to let you do for me what I should be doing for myself, because after it's done, you're going to get the credit. You're going to take the credit. And guess what? I'm going to willingly give you the credit after I praise God for you helping me to get something that I should have got for myself and by myself and with the help of what? What do you see on community? C-O-M-M-U-N-I-T. Unity. Unity helps you build community. Not dollars. Not donations. Unified minds coming together and say we need the dignity that we should have, and we it's not something you can go to the store and buy. It's like Imam Muhammad said, it's like the cabbage. It has to have an ethos that holds it together, to have leaves that surround it. It's hard to pull off. Hard to get you to turn your back on your brother. Hard to get you to turn your back on your sister. Hard to get you to speak more highly of others when you haven't said you can do the same thing for your brother and sister. If it's not that way, work on the relationship. Not work on the individual. Work on the relationship and invite them to do what you're doing and show them a way that gives them pride and gives them forgiveness and gives them the ability to repent and move on with this thing like it's supposed to. Because no one's going to help. If they give too much help, you get a welfare mentality, and they hurt you, the progress, more than they've helped it. Because you're not looking for a hand out. You're looking for a hand with how what we need to have a strong community, because it will be done in the name of unity. 314.
Yes, sir. I want to say alhamdulillah. And those who don't know what alhamdulillah means, it means that the praise and the thanks belongs to God first and foremost. That's very important. Yeah, I tell you, Imam Pasha, you're hitting on all cylinders today and everything, and I concur with everything been said, and even Amir, in terms of her appreciation for Al-Islam-based conversation. I think that the application of the information is vitally important. It's so vitally important. And, you know, I think you and I have similar backgrounds. I came from a Baptist family, strong Baptist family. So being the first one to take a different path, of course, that was not a favorable to my family to do that. But, you know, praise be to Allah in being able to, in the 60s, to be able to see in the turbulent 60s what was going on. And even after me and my brothers were baptized, I come to realize, if you will, that nothing really changed. And so that's when I began my search and research, you know, on the path to try to find out who is God, who is God. And, you know, I'll leave that there. But, you know, something you were saying earlier, you know, make good sense in terms of what it is that Allah has provided us with in his natural creation. And he's provided us with a balance. It's called ecology. And I think you mentioned that earlier. Ecology. Mm-hmm. There's an ecology. There is there's a balance in the natural creation. And you can't improve upon that. The only thing that man can do is disturb the nature, the balance that Allah has established mm-hmm. in that. And when he comes up with GMO, you see, he has to come mm-hmm. up with some genetically modified organisms where he takes seeds out of fruit that's supposed to have seeds in it. I can't remember the last time I had a grape with a seed in it. And mm-hmm. seeds in watermelon never bothered me, you know.
Right.
I just spit mm-hmm. them out, you know. I think when we was children, sometimes a seed accidentally swallowed one, but it never produced anything complicated or what. And you're absolutely right. You know, the practice today is medicated or operated. You know, that's what it is. But, you know, the pH balance, and Allah put a pH balance inside of us, too. So there's an outer balance and an inner balance. And we have to want to always stay balanced, you see. So it becomes the guidance of God and also what God's will is. And when, you know, Pasha, whenever it is that we don't acknowledge the guidance of God, we automatically are not going to be balanced. I mean,
right. Absolutely.
Out of all the things we say in terms of the importance, it's always important to remain balanced.
Yeah.
And, you know, for those who are God-conscious people, you don't have to be a Muslim to be balanced. All you need to be is a right-minded person. And as you talk about to have community, and those last words is unity, those who are God-conscious have to eventually come together, right-minded people,
yep.
and say,
absolutely.
Enough already. Enough already,
mm-hmm.
enough of this artificial this and this artificial that, and you substituting, giving us what the Creator didn't give us.
Mm-hmm.
These are devilish-minded people,
yeah.
you see. But if the majority remains silent and they don't speak out, just like what you just did, when we see a wrong, the Prophet Muhammad, the prayers and peace be upon him, said that we should take action, change it with your hand. That means take action against it. Okay, so,
mm-hmm.
okay, well, we can't take action against it. Then we should at least speak up and speak out against those wrongs. It is wrong, you understand, to alter things in God's creation. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
However, the Creator has given it to us, that's the way we want it, because you can't improve upon that. And there's a natural ecology that has to be respected. You see, it has to be respected. You know, the best foods, the best water, is always going to cost you the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's always going to cost you the most. They leave a few things intact so that they can charge you more for it. But
mm-hmm.
they're giving those things that are unnatural. They're producing that in terms of what is being provided and provided for us. But even more so, the same type of information is misinformation. So they're providing that also for us. This is what's bringing about the deformation in the human
mm-hmm.
being, the deforming mm-hmm. In the human being. So we have to look at that. And this should be part of the conversation, the communication, that information to help us realize words that have I-Z-E-N-I-Z-E is a play on the word eyes. You know, we don't need to analyze. Anal is from the rear end. We need to have real eyes and be able to see these things. And if we can't change it with our hands or take action against it, we can at least speak up and speak out against those things and form coalitions, you know, to take action in that regard and have a voice of choice that as consumers, we don't want any more genetic modified organism.
Right.
We don't need that in our life, you see. So this is how you bring about change. You were speaking about change, revolution in a positive way,
yeah.
that it's more powerful and potent when it becomes unified, a unified effort, you know, that we have to make together. And just not, as my son always say, you can't just talk about it. You have to be about it. You see, that's
yeah.
how change come about. And one last thing, I know you was in the Nation of Islam as I was, and I remember selling a Muhammad Speaks newspaper. And on the front of it, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had on there, 100% dissatisfaction brings about a change. People
mm-hmm.
don't change anything that they become complacent or become apathetic. In regards, it continues to exist, and what is bad becomes worse. But when we become dissatisfied, and once it becomes 100% dissatisfaction, that will bring about a change. I just want to say that, and as always, enjoying your production, Imam Pasha. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum assalam, and same to you. Always enjoying. Let me ask you a quick question while I got you here, though. How is the Eid affecting your programming?
I want to say that, generally speaking, on our holidays, and for those who are not Muslims and are not aware of Islamic celebrations, we actually have two holidays. One is called Eid al-Fitr, and that comes after the blessed month of Ramadan. And then 60 days after that, then we have our second holiday, that is Eid al-Adha. And this comes in the ninth day, after the ninth day of Arafat. On the 10th day, it is our celebration, Eid al-Adha. Eid al-Fitr is pertaining to the spiritual aspect of the human being. In the celebration individually, you know that we have successfully completed the fast, about 29 or 30 days. Eid al-Adha is the community, a social celebration. So, inshallah, God willing, that this Wednesday we will be celebrating Eid al-Adha. And just generally speaking, Imam Pasha, on our holidays, I don't broadcast. I think that's a time for, you know, believers to celebrate and be with their family, their friends, and community members in the celebration of these two very important and significant holidays. We just have those two holidays. But when we rightly understand it, you know, we are spiritual beings, but we are also social beings. And Ramadan precedes the Hajj, and everything that we get that we may learn, the self discipline, the self management, the self control, the self restraint, you know, from being more consciously regardful of God, of God's word, will, and way, this actually helps those who embark upon making the fifth pillar, which is Hajj. You need all of that in terms of spiritual excellence that you can achieve in the month of the blessed month of Ramadan for the social obligation and responsibility that we experience in the Hajj itself. So even though we're not making, many of us not making the Hajj, it's strongly recommended that on the ninth day, which will be tomorrow, that'll be Tuesday, that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam has said that those who are not making the Hajj, if they fast, they fast on that day, that Allah will bless those who fast the expiation of the sins, the mistakes, errors, and shortcomings that we had in the year past and the upcoming year, that for those 2 years, that the expiation of those sins and errors and shortcomings that we may have had, that those could be wiped out. So I'm just saying, it's not far. So I don't want those who may be listening is learning the religion. Say Mark Shaheed is saying that's far, that's obligatory. No, it's not obligatory. You know, that's your own choosing. But look at the mercy that Allah is extending to those who don't fast, but look how Allah is actually connecting those of us who are Muslims and believers that wasn't able to make the Hajj but still connected with the believers that's making Hajj. And we should make dua for them. And you know, Pasha, you've been around for many, many years like I have. It's common practice that if we know of believers in our local masajids and Islamic centers that are making Hajj, oftentimes there would be a get-together, well-wishers, and also, very important, believers will ask those who make it Hajj, please remember me on Arafat. Please make a dua for me on Arafat. And then the Prophet Muhammad has said that if you miss Arafat, then you really miss the Hajj. And there's so much to be said in regards to that. But I think for those who haven't made Hajj and maybe never will be able to make Hajj, that it's important that you don't miss Arafat, even if you're not able to go there. But understand what Arafat really represents for the human being. You know, it starts there with recognition of all of humanity, all of humanity as one, coming and answer the call, Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik, here I am, O Allah, that the invitation has been given and I have answered that invitation, and realizing and seeing that humanity is one and have come in that way. And there are the restrictions, the discipline that you have to have when you're making Hajj. You know, this is a wonderful, wonderful experience that you have to experience. You know, this is why many times when Hajjis come home, one of the first things that most masajids and Islamic centers, they want to give them the mic to share their experiences. So we should pray and make dua, personal prayer request that their Hajj would be accepted, that they'll be safe and they'll return back home safe. But at the same time, you know, we want to be conscious of what it is, how we can be connected to that. So those who want the expiation of their sins or don't think that they may have done anything wrong or made mistakes or errors in their life, well, you know, you have that opportunity for the expiation of that by fasting the day of Yama, Arafat, the day of Arafat, and that would take place tomorrow. And then the 10th day will be Wednesday, and that's when across the country, across the world, you will have the Eid Adhat prayer and also kutbah and celebration. So on that day, I treat it as a holiday, and so I don't broadcast on that day. So this Wednesday, those who are listening in, there won't be a parenting family reconstruction learning lab. I already informed Dr. Patricia Slaudine. She's good with that. And there won't be an MGM roundtable this Wednesday, inshallah, God willing. That inshallah means God willing, that I'll return next week. However, Thursday, the Courtship and Marriage Learning Lab will be in session here on IWDN Radio with Karan Shakir and yours truly. And we're looking at having an outstanding couple. And we're still on the true love recipe. We ask that you do tune in for that. You know, some of the things that you talked about actually are qualities and characteristics in the true love recipe. We'll be on E4, which is effort, which is excellence, which is evolving, and which is enthusiasm. So just think about that. Would that be in your true love recipe? How would that fit in? And if you didn't have that, how would that look? You know, people talk about love all the time, but is it true love? You know, it's true love. So I just wanted to say that. I hope I know I said more than what you asked for, you know, but I thought it'd be fitting to say something about this this holiday. You know, just think Al-Islam is a comprehensive religion. And, you know, most of us know the first five ayats that was revealed to Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, you know, that the prayers and peace be upon him. But how many of us know the last ayat that was given to the Prophet? And so the Prophet only made one hajj, one. And it was that on Mount Arafat that he said, you know, paraphrasing, that all hope has been given up in terms of trying to affect those who believe in Allah. On this day, I have perfected your way of life, and I have completed my favor on you, and I have preferred or chosen for you the religion of Al-Islam. We'll find that in Surah 5, Ayat 3 of the Quran. This was recited in what was called the last sermon. And also those things that we are dealing with today that oftentimes you find here on Al-Islam-based conversation, those things that bring about division, where the Prophet was addressing the ism, sexism, genderism, classism, racism, you know, he addressed all of that. And he said that perhaps to pass it down from generation to generation, and perhaps that those who are absent, they may get that message better than the ones that was actually physically there to witness that. So this last sermon was made on Mount Arafat. Mm-hmm. Very important. You know, there's a lot to be said in regards to that, but Allah just put the spirit on me to give something to those who are listening. You don't want to miss. You don't want to miss Arafat in terms of what it is. As Imam Muhammad said, that the root word of Arafat is Arafu. He said, yes, it means to get to know. We're talking about the social victory, to get to know and to become familiar. He said, but it also means to realize. He said, what? Realize what? Realize the good that Allah has put into others besides yourself. And so when we begin to have realize the good that Allah has deposited into others, even though they're from different nations, but from different tribes, and we don't see ourselves better than them, you know, but we see the good in them. Now, you understand, we can begin to come together as one humanity and begin to work together for the one destiny for all human beings, and that is to establish a just and an ethical human society. And that is what it was to Prophet Isa, alayhi salam. That is what it is he prayed for. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And this is what, in terms of the Prophet Musa, alayhi salam, that is looking for that promised land. That's the same thing. And this is what it was for Prophet Ibrahim, alayhi salam, the midlah of Ibrahim, the hope of Ibrahim, that was realized in the Prophet Muhammad, the prayers and peace be upon him. You know, when we think about Medina Managua, it was realized, that hope was realized in the finality of the prophets. This is so very, very important. This is what it is that Allah wants to see. Then we can have that heaven on earth that Prophet Isa prayed for. I could go on and on, but I think I said enough. Give my 2 cent worth here. So may God's peace be on all of us, and a blessed Eid to all that listen. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, and thank you again. I want to end on a very similar note as Brother Mark did there. I made Hajj only once, and it's a life changer. You know, it's a turning point in anyone's life who does it, especially if you're open to what happened. I thought I was going to go to a piece of heaven, but it was just filled with so many signs and signals and everything that life has to offer, and everything that you don't want about life. I was able to see in that one location, because Hajj invites the best and the worst, and it brings out the best and the worst of people. Just imagine that many people together in one spot. Saudi Arabia is a big country, but when you go and there's a million and some odd people on that one location there in Mecca in Medina, I mean, you're talking about crowds, and you're talking about congestion, and you're talking about differences. You know, I saw people get violently assaulted, and I saw them assault people, you know. Or even when I had the last day and I was making my circumambulate I was able to touch the black stone because I was pushed in there, and I was pushed out when I touched. And I twisted my feet in my little sandals, and had I not bought some new ones that had a toe guard in it, I probably would have fallen and got trampled. So Allah showed me that He was with me with that very act there. That was one of the apps that just showed me that. Because had I not bought the shoe that I bought and had the ones on them that didn't have the toe hold and didn't keep me a foot, probably would have got trampled. But I touched the black stone, let the inertia of what they were doing push me back out there, and was able to survive that ordeal. But once again, like I said before, and what Brother Mark said there at the end, he's paraphrasing, I'm paraphrasing, but I heard this while I was on Mount Arafat, and it was one of the prayers that I heard someone praying with, or heard them repeating, because I think it's a hadith. But it says that if by chance you go back and tell those who didn't hear and see what you saw, and by chance they may do more with it than you. So it was my duty to go back and tell as many people about my experience on Hajj and hope it will resonate with them more so than it did for me. And I saw a living testimony of that being true. People who hadn't been to Hajj but were so enamored that I had went, and it just picked my brain, what about this, what about that, you know, and I shared. And then you come back and see the fruits of that sharing, because you don't realize when you're doing it, it comes over you. There's a sincerity, there's an intent in your voice that people can pick up, that you want this for them next time. You telling them that if you don't do nothing else in lifetime, make sure you sacrifice enough and go. Because now what the price is to go is just unbelievably. But the reward is greater than that. And I had some thoughts about it at first. I was, well, I got to get this money and got to pay this off. I was $1,000 short with, I don't know, less than a week to go. And I'm not going to tell you how I got it. It was donated. The exact amount that I needed got donated. But I will tell you this. Before I left Hodgson, I made a phone call back, and I helped another guy made a phone call to his people because he was from another country. He didn't know how the phones worked. And I had just gotten off the phone, so I showed him. And the minute that I did it, and I went back to the masala and went back into the prayer area and said my prayer and drank some Zamzam water, it just came over me that Allah said, without me hearing any voice, hearing anything, because you have met the requirements, which is not the rituals that you did, but it was the spirit that you did them in. It was the willingness to walk in the grounds that the great prophets, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Muhammad, and others had walked to visit his grave, to visit the masjid that was first originated, and see the different one with the one in Medina, but also seeing Bilal's masjid that was raised in, all that, all the experiences were there. I accept Hajj. You know, if you don't make it to Arafat, you don't get it accepted. But if you don't conduct yourself, if you don't purify yourself, if you don't apply yourself, if you don't commit to the rituals like you're not going to see them and do them tomorrow or the next day, if you don't open yourself to be aware of every little thing that happens while you're there, there's a possibility that your intent wasn't right and you went there to Hajj, went all the way over there like it was a tourist visit. And you saw all of these wonderful things. You saw Mecca and you saw Medina. You saw the hustle and bustle in Mecca and the serenity in Medina. And you lived to go back and tell people about it. And you did it not to tell them about your trip and your journey and your way. You did it to tell them that this has undescribable things to offer. So much so that I can't even tell you what my Hajj was like. I can only encourage you to go so that you can see and be able to come back and tell people about your Hajj and what you see, saw, and what you did, and how much you've changed as a result of it. I will never be the same man I was after having gone and came back. Because when I went, I didn't just go. I didn't just get on the airplanes and fly. I didn't just stop in Egypt and see the artifacts, the pyramids and the camels and all that. I didn't just do all that. I didn't just change into my Hajj, you know, towels and everything, or Umrah to get ready for the Hajj. I did something that you have to do, and when you do it, you get the benefit of as you're doing it, but at the end of you doing it, you have to submit your whole self. There was no part of me thinking about home when I was at Hajj. There was no part of me worried about how many people that came because I was there early and I didn't see the streets full. I wasn't looking at how many funerals they had. Every day a funeral was being had. I didn't look at that. I didn't look at how clean they kept the masjid in Mecca and Medina so you could pray. I didn't see the fights and the arguments and all the rumbling and all that. I didn't see any of that. I saw this opportunity of a lifetime, and a lifetime and opportunity was what was needed. I didn't let them scare me off because of the number of people who were making prayer, and they said if something go wrong and they have a uproar and they all just take off wildly going and doing like they did when they had the fire, I didn't let that scare me. I went there with Allah in my heart and my head, and we chanted and put the sisters in the middle of us and we circled around them and we didn't bogart our way in. We went in with the humility that this is what's needed. Don't throw your stones in a way so that you hit something, not across the way, so that you don't hit something and hit a person, an individual, because that's the way it was until they fixed it, so like it is now. But I'm saying all that to say that it is an opportunity and a journey of a lifetime. If you haven't made it, make it. Do what it takes to make it. Don't complain about how it is and how other things. We do what we want to do, and we do it because we know Allah's will for us to do it. If you want to do it, pray, trust Allah, and if it's Allah's will, you'll be able to go, and you'll see more than I'm talking about because there's more to see now with all the construction and everything. But what you won't see if you don't go, is some of the things that only you were meant to see. It's waiting on you to recognize its value so you will go and get the benefit of its value. There are some things that you can't see here. There's some prayer that no matter how many you make here, that doesn't add up to the ones praying over there at the Kaaba, watching the birds fly over. So many things I could mention that made me know that this was a trip of a lifetime, and that in our lifetime, we're obligated to make it. It didn't say if you can get around to it. No, you're obligated to take it. It's the final step that proves and shows and declares and registers with the whole world and families and friends and whatnot. They ask you, yeah, you could try to say, I'm Haji, yes. But let it be in your heart. Let it be in your soul. Let others know. This is not a vacation. This is not a trip. This is not the car. This is not getting on the airplane. This is not getting on the ship to take the cruise or airplane to go to Dubai or whatever. This is much, much greater, much more significant, much more important. And when you're doing your list, bucket list, or whatever you're doing, put it on your list of things to do. It's an absolute must. Put a one by it. Raise it from 10 to 1 on your list of things to do. And when you make that commitment and you make a vow, as far as the money is concerned, if it's your will, it's the Lord's will, and he will bless you to get the funds to go. He will. But you have to have it in your heart. You have to have that kind of desire and need. You have to see it as the final frontier that says everything that you've been trying to say because you went to, and they say this here, and we shouldn't say, that's not Allah's house. But we say, we went to God's house. We went to Allah's house. He's not there in that cube or sitting in the, out there like that. He's not in Mecca at the, in the Kaaba that's been draped with velvet. He's not in there. But the entity that we're trying to help you understand requires some kind of symbol to show you so you can recognize what is there. Those are not Moses' feet. I mean, Prophet Ibrahim's feet right there by the thing that you can't stand on them. There's no man that could be feet could be that big to do that be his feet. But the bigness of what he brought is what should be in your mind when you're standing there, when you step to the side of it and you make your prayer. That's just what you're missing. It's just so much more that you'll miss if you haven't gone. You need to go. And don't act like it's getting late or you're too old or you can't have that kind. You won't be able to raise that money. The minute you make your intentions to raise the kind of money, Allah will bless you. And Allah's blessing to help you raise the kind of money is the only thing you need. And to go without thinking about the money, but thinking about the blessing that you got from when you raised the money, and then go. Go open-hearted. Go open-minded. It do what it do. It has the rituals that you do, and I conclude with this, but it has not yet shown you what's behind the ritual after you complete it, after you get over there and you make the journey and you're there and you're in your shroud, you know, and you see the sisters, they're not all shrouded up, they're not all down to the, like you and I call them the big diapers. You got your big diapers on. Because what? You need to be born again. And that will do that for you. You'll come back another person, a different person. You come back born again. And you'll have the magical moment of those days that you were there. They will always resonate in your mind. You'll never forget what it was like. So many memories. So much happened in that short period of time. So much to see in a short period of time. So I ask you to ask yourself, look in the mirror, make the commitment, make the journey of your lifetime to a place that, like I said before, it's like no other place. You're there with people of up into the millions from all the different places in the world. You get to see in one setting what the world is like. All the different personalities and races, and you hear them all there for one reason, and one reason alone. Like the brother said, Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik. Here I am. I answer your call. I call on you, but this time I'm letting you call on me, and I'm answering your call. And I come forth not in my name, not in my ethnicity. I come forth in your name. I come forth from your call. I answer your call. And you, in turn, answer my call for mercy, for guidance, promise that you say that you will give for those that do answer your call, that do turn their heads in your direction and get your orientation for them. that you go forth not in your name, but in his name. Nothing better can be done. Nothing more rewarding can be done. Nothing more enlightening can be done. So like I said before, give it the attention that it needs. Let it help you to make the decision of a lifetime, in your lifetime, to do what others have done and encourage others to do after you've done. So we thank you again for coming out with us. We appreciate your time. Appreciate you being with us. And once again, we greet you with the greetings of only, with a greetings of peace that only Allah can give. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.